On Before the Bestseller, we talk with our favorite authors about the books they wrote and the stories behind how those books made it big. I'm your host, Alex Straffy, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Jotham Stein is the author of Negotiate Like a CEO, and this book is the only true how-to guide on protecting yourself when you sign up with a new employer or you're starting a new company as an entrepreneur. We've all heard the stories, and it's even been glorified in the media, such as, you know, Facebook and a lot of other companies where the founders will get in a fight, one of them will win and one of them will lose. Or we've heard about investors completely taking over a company and kicking out the hardworking founder who's now being pushed out of their own baby. So Jotham Stein is here today to talk about some of the quick ways that you can ensure that you are protected from any of these misdoings so that you don't end up the plot of a next Hollywood blockbuster. Next time, Jotham will come back on to talk about how he's written a book, which, from what I've seen, is one of the best word-of-mouth spreading grassroots marketing books I've ever seen. So a big welcome to Jotham.
Jotham Stein, thank you for being here today.
Hey, Alex, thanks for having me on your podcast. Great to be here.
You already know what's coming, a childhood story that made you who you are today.
You know, I know that was coming and I thought about it. And the answer is I don't know the answer to that question because I think I'm an amalgam of a bunch of experiences. But what I can tell you is just a little after childhood, early adulthood, I don't know whether this is what formed me or what is a manifestation of who I am, but I hitchhiked around the world before I settled down, started to become a lawyer and wrote books. And I've hitchhiked across Europe. I've hitchhiked across Africa, Australia, New Zealand, parts of Asia. And where I couldn't hitchhike, I would, in the old days, I would take the cheapest form of transport. So I've been in many, many countries and met lots of people. And even to this day, part of why I enjoy being a lawyer for entrepreneurs and writing books about them and executives is they're fascinating people, particularly entrepreneurs who are passionate about whatever they're doing. Could be passionate about, you know, shipping, could be passionate about biopharmaceuticals, could be passionate about chips. It doesn't retail, marketing, whatever it is.
I did not know that about you. Usually I find lawyers to be very risk adverse. And so to travel the world is a pretty risky endeavor.
Yeah. And my son would say, the way you did it, you can't do it now because I really hitchhiked around. But that's part of who I am, right? Part of being an entrepreneur yourself, starting your own business, as I did as a lawyer many moons ago. I write about it in the book. And part about giving advice, I get half of what the advice I give is business advice. You have to be able to tell people when there are risks and, you know, what they, and then they have to decide what they want to do about their risks. So it was, you know what, I wouldn't give up anything for the years I spent on the road meeting people and seeing the parts of the world. It's fascinating.
It reminds me, my dad did the same thing. Now he's a lifelong teacher, so very different career path, but I would say he's enjoyed his career a lot more because he did so much, you know, he was able to travel and see so much of the world when he was younger. Do you kind of find that too, or?
Absolutely. It's always with me. And, you know, even today, like just earlier in this year, there was I'm a skier too. And so I figured, okay, better go ski all the mountains before my knees give out. And so I took off a month. I carried my computer with me because, again, I could give advice from or help my clients from anywhere or write from anywhere. And, you know, I went to ski the Powder Highway, which is the mountains to the west of Calgary. And I never skied them before, and I had a wonderful time. I wouldn't give up that experience, which just happened this year, for anything. So, you know, it was great. It's great. It was great to do that. Like your father, I'm a much better person and much, much more knowledgeable about the world because I went and saw the world. So
you're the first lawyer digital nomad. It sounds
like. right. Before they, you know, the old days, you know, when I carried with me to take pictures. Now, of course, everybody carries their iPhone. I had an old single lens reflex with you know, the old rolls of film in them. And so you had to be careful when you went through an x-ray machine at some airport that I always carried a lead bag so that they wouldn't ruin my film. And you had to, now you can take like 15, you know, pictures in one second or 2 minutes, you know, you go around. In those days, I would have to like be aware. I had 20 rolls of film with me, 25 rolls of film. And I would write down every picture I took so I know where it was. I mean, don't do that these days anymore.
Very, very different. All right. So tell us, why did you write Negotiate Like a CEO?
I wrote Negotiate Like a CEO literally to help people, because I realized that there are so many people out there in the world who have their own business or who take a job, and they have no idea sort of how to protect themselves, because everybody's passionate about what they're going to do. Or listen, they may take a job because they need the job, but they're focused on their job. They're focused doing on a good job for their company. And, you know, in support to their family, whether it's a business or whether it's your own job. And they have no idea how to protect themselves if things go wrong. And they often go wrong if you start business. It doesn't matter whether you start a business with your family member or you're starting a business with, you know, that you hope to bring public in 6 or 7 years or even sooner than that in Silicon Valley sometimes. Or whether you're going into a job, you know, as an employee, as a first level year employee or as a CEO. There are ways that if you have any leverage at all that you can protect yourself. And I can't tell you how many people come to me after they've been screwed once before. And so then they always come back to me. And so I thought to myself, stepping back, I wrote the book that teaches lawyers how to represent entrepreneurs and executives and employees. All right. And so then I decided, well, I should write a book for everybody. That's the regular world, not just lawyers, to help them. And so that was the reason why I wrote the book.
It reminds me a lot of Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote The Body Keeps the Score, because he wrote that book for other psychologists and psychiatrists and people within the, you know, behavioral health world. And then it ended up taking on its own life within, you know, the public, because, you know, people don't realize that people in the public, you know, want to have access to this information as well. And I don't remember the last time I read an employee agreement or a contract in any way, because even if I did read it, I'd have no idea what it was talking about anyway. And when I first, you know, came into contact with your book, Negotiate Like a CEO, obviously, you know, there's a lot of other really popular negotiation books right now, like Split the Pie by Barry Nailbuff or, you know, Chris Voss and Never Split the Difference. But your book isn't about negotiating. It's about the specifics within, basically, it's not just like, oh, well, you know, you should never, you know, say no to someone, or it's not negotiation tactics. It's the specific, this is a line you should have to protect you in this way. And this is the, how you do this. So it's a very different kind of book.
That's exactly right. Think about it. Why is it called Negotiate Like a CEO? Because what do CEOs do first? Almost every CEO, what they do is they negotiate their exit agreement. They negotiate their protection on day one before they get on the plane and run the company. And listen, I don't know a CEO out there who's worth their salt, I would say, who doesn't think they're going to make their company the best thing since sliced bread. But what do? They know that things go wrong. And so they protect themselves. So the part of the book is I tell you all the potholes. I want everybody out there to know the potholes. I want to help them, right? What are the potholes? Some of those potholes are what the other side is thinking to protect themselves. What is the company thinking? What is the investor thinking? And then part of the book is what do you do to protect yourself against that possibility, that potential pothole? And so it's not about, sometimes you do have to say no. Because, you know, in your situation, for example, you might want to go get a job somewhere else or find another investor or decide some other family member, some other friend is a better person to go into business with. But I point out all the issues and all the potholes and then tell you how to negotiate to protect yourself.
The stories are also hilarious. You must, because you work with such characters on a daily basis. And I'm sure some of these are like you said, you know, none of these stories represent, you know, you give the disclaimer in the beginning, none of these are, you know, exact stories or whatever, but they're stories that happen over and over again, right? Not specific, but representative of situations you faced over and over again. It's honestly hilarious because, you know, I feel like entrepreneurs and, you know, people, executives are, you know, oftentimes bring such personalities where you hear some of the stuff they said back to you. And it's funny, and you're still able to provide advice. Obviously, our listeners are going to be in different seats, right? Some of them are entrepreneurs. A lot of them are entrepreneurs because they're writing their own books, which are oftentimes part of their marketing for their own companies. But there's also, you know, some executives who listen in who are, you know, using a book as well to improve their situation. So there's a couple specific things, specific questions I wanted to cover. And I'm sure there's, you know, so many details within this for you to go in different directions. So obviously, you know, we'll give the disclaimer, you know, this is not legal advice as you have to give. It's not legal advice, you know, talk to your own attorney, whatever have you. But, you know, some specific questions I'd love to ask, starting off with, you know, what makes a great offer letter when you're starting with a company?
Okay, so this is a general, because of what you just said, every state's different, right? The law in Texas is different than Alaska, than California. I mean, for example, there's only four states or so that prohibit non-compete agreements. So if you have one in California in your employment agreement, that's going to be illegal. If you have one in Florida, that's going to be expected. And, you know, then there's different variations of that. So that just gives you, non-compete could be a terrible thing for an employee, but it puts it in perspective. So generally, if you have any leverage at all, you want to protect yourself. The best offer letter doesn't just say salary, bonus, salary, bonus, commissions, whatever it is you're getting paid, healthcare, you know, if you have a car or something. It doesn't just have that. The best offer letters have protection in them. And what do I mean by protection? You negotiate like a CEO. You can't negotiate the same amount as a CEO unless you are a CEO. But your protection is, you know, if they fire me, I'll get some pay on the back end. What would that be? Could be 1 week, could be 10 weeks, it could be 3 months, could be 6 months of severance. You have protection. Somebody will pay for your healthcare, your COBRA payments, premium payments for a certain number of months. If you have equity, which is really important, and equity means stock options, profits, interest, something like that in the company, then you'll have some protection. So they will forward vest your shares, or in certain states, they won't repurchase your shares for some too low price. So that's another reason why you have to be jurisdiction dependent or state dependent. It's general advice, because what you're negotiating for in different parts of the country can be different things because the markets are different and the laws are different.
Yeah. And I know you talk a lot about the fact that when it comes to non-competes in the book, you know, you talk about depending on the state you're in, it really depends on how enforceable that is or what exactly is enforceable. From an entrepreneur standpoint, right? And we get a lot of advice, oh, you should, you know, incorporate in Delaware, or you should incorporate in Wyoming or these different states. From an entrepreneur perspective, you know, what are some of your favorite states to incorporate in? And I'm sure, you know, there's obviously some nuance depending on the goals of the entrepreneur as well, but maybe just some guidelines along, you know, what should an entrepreneur be looking at when it comes to incorporating?
That's a tough question. I'll give you the, and I'll tell you why. Many companies around the world or around the country, I mean, are incorporated in Delaware because investors like it, because there's clear corporate law and so forth. However, I can't speak for every state, and I'm only licensed in five states: New York, Illinois, Colorado, California, District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. So I think that's five. So I can't speak to all of them, but I can give you an example of what's important and one thing entrepreneurs never think of, and their corporate lawyers never tell them this. All right, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have leverage, you would probably rather form a California corporation compared to a Delaware corporation if your goal is to protect yourself down the road. All right, and why would you want to do that? There's multiple reasons, but I'll give you two. First of all, if you're going to have a merger and acquisition, you're going to sell your company. In California, by law, every class of stock has to vote independently to approve an acquisition. So therefore, it doesn't matter how much your investors have and how much protection they have for their preferred stock. Your common stock, which is typically what entrepreneurs and employees get, stock options is typically common stock. They have to vote in favor of a transaction. Now, of course, investors would never want that. And somebody who's looking pro company investors would never want that because they want to have control of, say, a transaction. Another example that I'll give is last time I checked. So this might be a little old, but you need in California a reason to remove a director. So typically you have to remove a director for cause. In Delaware, typically you can remove a director for any reason just by a shareholder vote. So there's a little more protection there for directors. So it's typically the founder of a company when he or she is being forced out or being kicked out, or they get kicked off the board. And so sometimes force will be removed from the board. I don't mean by with bats and rakes and stuff by force. I mean by somebody votes the shares and the sure. vote removes them. So what harder to do in California? There's other rules, I would say, that are better for entrepreneurs as well. But frankly, most Silicon Valley companies will incorporate, especially if the individual, the founder, is thinking about building the company and having an exit, like selling at some point or going public or whatever they're thinking about and taking an investment. They're going to start in Delaware. Not always. There's some famous California companies, but it's often they do that. Or if they go to a corporate lawyer, they say just do it in Delaware. And they can give all sorts of reasons why it should be in Delaware. But if you're founder focused, you'd want to be in California.
Makes sense. Yeah, because investors like Delaware. What are some of the, you know, you talk about a multitude, and you're, again, this, I find the stories to be so entertaining. You talk about a lot of different ways that entrepreneurs and founders and executives really screw themselves over. What are some of the quickest ways that entrepreneurs and executives screw themselves over when, you know, entering into a contract, employment, or starting a company?
Exactly what you just said in the beginning of your podcast. You never read the employment agreement or the documents, and even if you read them, you wouldn't understand them. So they either don't read them, or they don't understand them, or they don't understand the import, or they don't understand and don't educate themselves about the risks they're taking, the potholes that are there. Listen, I can look at an employment agreement or a entrepreneurial investor agreement when investors take in money, and I can tell you that you're setting yourself up for a failure, for risk later down the road. The pothole may not manifest itself for a year or 2 years. So they don't do that. That's what they don't do. They don't protect themselves, and they don't inform themselves about the risks. So listen, maybe they have no leverage, but they're not going in with their eyes wide open. And so some of those individuals get really shocked when, you know, they find out with no notice that they're being forced out, being outvoted, being fired, whatever it is. I want to just step back for a second. You talk about the stories. And so I don't know if all your listeners understand. My book is about 40% literally totally nonfiction, totally fictional stories that I made up at the Pete's Coffee House. They're in the book world, they'd be considered genres, right? They're repetitive stories that happen over and over again. That's why they're not factually, they're not any particular client. I didn't write about that. I made them up. But they're repeat events that happen over and over and over again. And so to entertain all the readers and make it an easy read, but yet underscore what I'm writing about, I wrote about those hilarious stories. I made them funny. I made a lot of the characters in the stories. They're vignettes, right? They're 4 pages, 3 pages, 5 pages. Those vignettes, the names of the characters remind me of something usually. And some of the stories are by my travels. Denali One is a story, right? There's a story about, and that's a sad story that happens a lot. And there are positive stories in the book. What's Denali One? Denali One is the name of the company. It's the story's title is Powerless. And it's a founder getting forced out of the company by somebody who stood up at his wedding and his old college friend. And I've seen that happen multiple times over my career. So that's one of the reasons you're protecting yourself, right? And so, or that's the story. And then I'm underscoring a specific part you were talking about earlier about how to protect yourself. There's a line in the current investor documents when investors invest with entrepreneurs that can really kick out a founder even and make them completely powerless, even though they own 90%, 95% of the common stock. All right, there's a sentence in there that's become new thing in the last 5 years or 10 years. So I write about it, and then I tell the founder or the person reading, or you, Alex, if you're going to go into a business like this and take an investment, how to protect yourself against it. So this story, which is a funny story, underscores, or sad story in this case, underscores what I'm writing about. And Denali One, okay, what is Denali One? I mean, Denali is a mountain, right, as we all know, and in Alaska, and I made it Denali One, and it's a, you know, place I travel to. I've seen. So there's a bunch of other stories, people I've met along the way, you know, or areas that have inspired me, sports I've done are in the stories too. So you know, I spent time in Chicago. There's one about people in Meg, you know, near Meg's Field in Chicago and so forth. Well, the old Meg's Field that got plowed under during some political event in Chicago that could only happen in Chicago.
That's what I love about this book is it's not just a read once. It's more of a pocket guide that you hang on to, that as you face certain situations or as you go through your career and you're faced with different contracts, you know how to handle different situations and you know what to be cognizant of because you have the book on hand. And it gives such good detail of, hey, you know, here's the summary advice at the end as well of, you know, here are the main points of what you need to be looking out for, which is really useful. A lot of people, obviously, who are listening are also employees. What are some of the most useful things to know as an employee legality-wise?
Legality-wise, that's a tough question. I should say that most of what I talk about is for non-union employees. So union, you have to be, if you're a union employee, you need to go understand what your collective bargaining agreement is, because that's been negotiated for you. Yeah. But legally, you want to know, the most important thing is to understand what it means to be an at-will employee. Most of us are all at-will employees around the country, from whether you're a CEO all the way down to your first job. And that means you can be hired or fired for any reason or no reason at all, with or without cause, with or without notice. And it's totally legal to do that in most states. Can't be fired for an illegal reason, okay? Age discrimination, race discrimination, something like that. But you can be, to understand that. And then that's what you're protecting yourself against. And so that's really the most important thing. People don't realize they give themselves, employees give themselves to their company, and they get so invested emotionally and monetarily. I mean, their lives depend on it, and they don't realize they could be kicked out with no notice. I mean, it's in most states when they're an at-will employee. And check out your employment agreement. It's going to say, unless you're something special, like if you're an actor or something in California, in Hollywood, well, they have, or your personality on a TV show, for example, or a news show, you might have a contract for a term for a number of years, but most people don't have that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about basically all the ways people can protect themselves. This book is so dense and so specific that, you know, there's a million different situations we could talk about here. I want to obviously, you know, stick with the overview of just, you know, the ways that people can general ways people can protect themselves, and also just understand that if you are entering into a contractual agreement with a company, this is going to be your faithful, friendly companion. If you can tell anything from this conversation with Jotham and just how much information he knows, what has been one of your favorite stories or, you know, basically situations that, you know, maybe surprised you when it came to a contract or legality wise, just or negotiating like a CEO? What's been one of your most interesting stories?
One of them is downtime might not be too long. And it's the story is about a really superb, really spectacular employee who she's like a doctor, and she's the chief medical officer of a company, and she gets forced out because they made a CEO change, and she's not a yes woman or yes man or yes person. All right. So she gets forced out, but the vote is 5-0. And this is what's surprising. This happens over and over again. And so she gets kicked out. And I put some sports in there. I did the sports of luge, which is sledding. I like to ski. But this one, she's a biathlete. So I use that to say she's a straight shooter in business. And also, she's a much better shooter at the target range. Biathletes ski, cross-country skiing, and they shoot. And they're much better shooter, a straight shooter, than she is a cross-country skier. And so I put that in there, too. All right. So what's the surprise here? And what am I writing about? It's in the section of the book that's about reincarnating yourself if you get fired or get forced out of your company.
Because as you say, everyone gets fired, and people you know have been fired. So it is part of the situation.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody, that's exactly what it's about. We're all going to get fired or have been fired, or our friends have been fired, or family members, or forced out of a company. So what? So then reincarnate yourself. It happens all the time. So the story, and I write about, many of my clients call me 6 months later and say the best thing that ever happened to me was I was fired or forced out. And I tell them that in advance. I say, you're suffering now and I know it. So but just remember the words I'm telling you, that many of my clients call me 6 months later. So I'm underscoring that with this story. She doesn't have to wait that long. So what happens is 2 weeks later, she's at the target range. She got a severance agreement. So they kicked her out, but they gave her a severance agreement. So she doesn't need to work for 6 months or a year. And she gets a text in this story that I made up. And what is the text? Who's the text from? It's from one of the investors that sat on the board that voted 5-0 to get rid of her. And and she's texts back, "Why are you contacting me? I took a severance agreement. I'm not suing the company. I'm happy. And, you voted to fire me. What are you texting me for?" And he texts back, "Well, I have other portfolio companies for you to look at. It didn't work out well. I'm sorry about that at your prior company. But hey, we have these two other companies. I'd really appreciate it for you to look at. You might be a good CMO, chief medical officer at those companies." And so my point in that story is, A, you can reincarnate yourself. B, don't necessarily burn bridges. C, in business, investors sometimes will back the CEO till the day they fire the CEO, but they know you're good at what you do, as the investor does in this circumstance. They know this is a great employee, and so they what does that investor want that employee to do? Run another one of his or her companies. In this case, a he, because it was a he as the investor, and a she as the wonderful, spectacular employee. And so that's an example. That's, you asked me what surprised myself when I was a young lawyer. The fact that somebody might be fired from a company in the world of private equity and venture capital and be given a job offer by the same people who sort of forced them out, I was like, "What are you doing?" And the first client of mine who I would say, "What are you doing? How could you work for this person? Or how could you consider their job?" Because of course I helped them on the exit and I'm helping them on the employment agreement. And he was like, very experienced individual. He's like, "This is business." So, he really liked me, but it didn't work out at the other place. And I know this guy likes me. I have a great relationship with him. I'm like, "He fired you." I mean, this is a young lawyer. I'm like sitting there like I'm now experienced, or you might say jaded about this stuff. But yeah. but it happens in real life. And so if one of your listeners gets fired or forced out, well, first of all, they should read my book, because you're right. It'll protect them throughout their whole life. But let's just say it happens. And they're listening, they haven't bought the book, or they had no leverage. So what? They can reincarnate themselves. We have a big country. We have a lot of opportunities out there. We all know people who, or I certainly know people who've been very successful the third business they started, or the fourth business. Or you must know, you're in that world, somebody who's really successful with the second book they wrote, or the third book they wrote, and the first book didn't do well, and the second book didn't do well. Or alternatively, they wrote the first book, it went through the roof, and then there's 2, 3, and 4 aren't as good. So, there's many, many possibilities out there, many upsides out there. And that was the most surprising sort of business thing that would happen to me. And it's not surprising anymore. It's now something I counsel people on. You know, that person may come back and make you an offer. It's happened multiple times. Because it's happened multiple times in my career, I could write about it, right?
And that's what I love so much about you and your book, is you have such a wealth of knowledge because you've just seen so many situations, which is incredible knowledge. So Jotham, thank you for coming on here, teaching us a little bit about how to protect ourselves. Next time, we're bringing Jotham back to talk about the marketing component of his book, but we're going to talk about something that's a bit unique. And that is, Jotham's book, more than anyone else's book that I've worked on recently, has an incredible word of mouth factor to it, meaning it was written incredibly well. And it's difficult because you pack so much information into the book. You know, this isn't just like how to feel better about yourself, or this is legality, red line, like getting into the specifics of things. And yet I'm seeing it move so many additional copies each week, just because of the fact that it was written so well. And so I want to hear your formula for writing such a good book. So thank you for being willing to come back on, and we'll talk to you next time, Jotham.
Thanks for having me on your show, Alex.
Thank you for listening. I know there's many other things you could have been doing during this time, and I hope you found this episode incredibly useful for you and your journey. And if you did, or if you have any feedback, I would love to hear that in a review on Apple. That would be fantastic, or anywhere else that you are listening to this show. So thank you. And if you're the type of listener that is also an author or looking to be an author soon, feel free to email me at alex@advancedamazonads.com. That's alex@advancedamazonads.com. And I'll add you to our weekly newsletter, where I send out all of the best marketing tips I've ever heard from authors that I've had on this show and many of the authors that we work with. So I look forward to hearing from you if that's something you'd find useful. And either way, I look forward to having you back for our next episode.